The University of Kansas Health System is proud to be the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Current. From youth athletes to the pros, we put player care first to turn their dreams into reality. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/kccurrent.
The Zone is presented by Guarantee Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
All right, welcome back here in the Zone right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. Two more hours to go on this beautiful Wednesday edition of the show. We talk now with our college basketball insider, Myron Medcalf, benefiting Jackson County CASA, court-appointed special advocates, community volunteers just like you. They stand up and speak out to help children who have experienced abuse or neglect. Jackson County CASA recruits, trains, and supports the CASA volunteers to advocate for the best interests of children who are in the Jackson County family court system till they have a safe and permanent home. It's Jackson County CASA, CASA-MO.org. Myron Medcalf, our guest. Myron, what's up, man? How are you, sir?
I'm good, man. Glad to be off the road after a two-week stretch, man. So, feeling good that the season's over. It was a good time, but ready to do some fishing and relaxing, man.
I was going to ask you if you're finally sleeping in your own bed, if you've got the day or two of being able to do that.
Yeah, this will be my second night.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to having more, man, just getting back to sort of a normalcy, man. It's a long, long season, but a good season.
You a fisherman?
Oh, yeah, I love the fish.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that about you because, you know, you said you can't wait to get back to relaxing and fishing. So I did not know you were.
Yeah, I'll fish anytime, anywhere there's water, man. I'll fish all day, man. I love fishing, playing some bad golf, you know, all the stuff you can't do consistently during the season. So,
yeah.
I mean, the cool thing about where I live is, like, when I get back is when it starts to get warm.
Yeah.
So it's, like, perfect timing
for
me. In Minnesota.
Yeah, and it's beautiful during the summer, so you're not out there in 110-degree weather with all the humidity. Go play golf, you know, so it's all good there. Myron Medcalf is our guest from ESPN. All right, let's talk about the ending to this season and UConn winning yet another national championship and sort of the dominance that they displayed over these 12 games in these two tournaments. What's the historical perspective from your standpoint and viewpoint of this UConn team and what we witnessed over these last 2 years for Dan Hurley and his team?
Well, I think, I mean, you know, you can only compare it to kind of modern times, right? I mean, the Duke run, the Florida back-to-back, and now this. It's more impressive to me because I think with those two runs, they were both bringing back the cores of their team. So with Duke, you're bringing back Christian Laettner and Grant Hill and Bobby Hurley. With Florida, Joakim Noah, Corey Brewer, Al Horford all coming back. With this group, like Donovan Clayton was on that team last year, but he wasn't the star. Tristan Newton, he comes back, but he wasn't the star. Alice Caravan, Cam Spencer. So I just felt like the way they got better and just doing it with two different teams in a lot of ways, I thought that was really impressive for Dan Hurley. So, I mean, this back-to-back run – is as good as any. And I think just the individual team is the most dominant team I've covered probably since 2012 Kentucky. So I just think it is not just historic for the back-to-back, but just because of what they were able to do. I mean, outscoring their opponents by 140 points combined is an NCAA tournament record. And you know, I don't feel like because they did it last year, I think people kind of look at this year and they're like, okay, fine, they did it again. But this year was more dominant than last year, and that's really impressive.
And I think what separates them and from the Florida team that, you know, went back-to-back is Florida returned every player in their top seven. Their starting five and their two best reserves returned from 1 year to the next. That was like a quite literal, let's run it back together. And they did. And congrats to them by running it back together. Danny Hurley had to replace four of his top six. The top six guys that played minutes against San Diego State in the championship game last year, four of those guys are not on UConn this year. He had to replace those guys. That to me takes it to another level of how impressive this year was, because this was the more dominant run, Myron, and it wasn't, let's just get everybody back together. It's another year of playing together. It's another year of feeling invincible, and you're just going to smother teams. Now you brought in a freshman in Steph Castle. You got Cam Spencer. You got some role player, reserve players that then had to step up and fill into starting roles. And you went out there and just beat teams down even worse than you did the year prior.
Yeah, that's why I think it's different. I mean, that's where the coaching aspect comes, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. I think Dan Hurley has certainly elevated himself among the great coaches we've seen because of what you just said and how he did it. Donovan Kling was hurt for a chunk of the season, but still got better, became one of the best players in America. Stephen Castle was hurt early, comes out, and he ends up playing his way into the lottery probably. Mm-hmm. So I just think doing it with young guys, doing it with veterans, Tristan Newton evolving into an All-American, it's just been phenomenal to watch, man. And then to do it, again, to your point, in a more dominant fashion. I mean, last year was one of the most dominant runs we saw. And then this year, for no one to get close, I mean, Alabama was tied with 12:05 to play. They lost by double digits. Purdue, they're right with them early. And then they go on a little run in the first half. And then next thing you know, we're spending most of the second half being like, okay, will UConn cover? You know, by how much will they cover? So I think the fact that, like, they've just been knocking out teams is one of the more impressive things we've seen. 2021 Baylor was really mm-hmm. impressive.
Yeah.
2018 Villanova, that was a really, really strong run. You can't put 2015 Kentucky in there because they lost. But
yeah.
I think this is one of the more dominant runs we've seen in recent college basketball history.
This was a team that, you know, trailed for a total of 51 seconds in the second half of the 12 tournament games they've played the last 2 years. A total of 51 yeah. seconds. And those 51 seconds came in the first two games they played against Iowa and St. Mary's, meaning they played 10 consecutive games in the tournament where they have not trailed for a second. And yeah. four of those games are in the national semifinal and national championship game. Like, it is unbelievable. And look, Dan Hurley deserves all of the flowers that he's getting, because it's not only how good the team is and players. It's not like, you know, they went and got a bunch of five stars and the best transfers that were out there. And you just put together this incredibly dominant, talented team that was going to out-athlete and out-talent every single player, every single team that they go out there on the floor against. There's also the coaching aspect, the action they run on offense, the defense that they play as well, that, you know, and the strategy. Zach Edey's going to get his, but we are not letting anybody else get a shot. Like, a shot. They went Purdue 330 straight games with at least 8 3-point attempts. They went 1 of 7 against UConn. They only attempted 7. Their 330 straight game streak was broken, snapped, in the national championship game. Because, Myron, what do we say? The best way to defend the 3-point line is to not allow them to shoot one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's phenomenal.
To watch it, man, was crazy, right? Because here I am thinking, like, okay, I'm just bombing threes if I'm Purdue. Like, that's the only way you're going to win this game, is you got to shoot a bunch of threes. Zachy has to play big, but you got to shoot a bunch of threes and hit them. Right? That's what you do. I have never watched a team have a player who's that good as Zachy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just not be able to do anything else. And if you watch the game, man, it was like, there were looks, and little by little, as Castle and Cam Spencer and Tristan Newton, like, we're not going to let you get clean looks.
Yeah,
you saw Purdue getting timid. Now they're forcing it into Edey. Now everybody knows where the ball's going. Now, you know, the genius that Dan Hurley is, he's like, okay, you do this for enough possessions, you know, a 65-70 possession game, I'm not sure how many there were, and you're passing up 3 for 2 every time. Well, now you're winning. Okay, fine. Edey might get in, and he did.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not even shooting threes. I mean, once they realized they couldn't get those looks. I mean, Alex Caravan, 6'8". Cam Spencer, all big guys. I mean, that's a UConn team with NBA size. I think when they realized they couldn't get those clean looks, it was like Edey's going to have to score 50 or something in order to have a chance. Oh, by the way, you got to stop this team on offense. And I don't even know if UConn was running sets, man. They were just balling. They were just hooping. And it just is it is one of the best teams I've covered, man. Just in everything they were able to do offensively and defensively. But to stop a team from doing what it does best is one of the most impressive defensive efforts I think we've seen in tournament history.
Yeah. I know that sometimes watching the game through a betting perspective, and while I may have a little bit of money over here and this player prop or this game may change things or make it sour or whatever it might be, but I do think to an element of what you're talking about and how they limited Purdue and not even allowing them to take shots, you know, one of the props that I had was Fletcher Loyer over 1.5 threes in the game. And it allowed me to be more acutely aware of what you're talking about and how smothering it was, because he got one open look, but he shot it quickly. It was like, I'm open, I got to shoot it, and it just banged off the back iron, right? I mean, it wasn't really close at all. Yeah. But it was just smothering, and you're watching, like, they can't get anything. And so sort of even paying even you know, more closer attention to that was all the more impressive in that particular moment. Just seeing some of the numbers that came out of it. Like, I didn't know about the 330 straight, you know, games until I saw a tweet about it that they only had seven. And I'm like, well, that's what people talk about all the time. It's like, well, their three-point defense is this, three-point defense is that. Like, well, what's the best way to play three-point defense is to not let a team shoot them. And they shot seven of them. But also how smothering they were, they only made one of them. So the X's and O's were just phenomenal. And I think what the last couple of years have shown, Myron, is that you can recruit and you can throw some players out there. And Calipari, when he got to Kentucky, and we'll talk about, you know, Cal in a little bit, but this is just a bigger overall point, Myron. Calipari got to Kentucky and got to the Elite Eight with stud players, got to the Final Four with stud players, won a championship with stud players, got to the Final Four in 14 with stud players, Final Four in 15 and undefeated going into the Final Four with stud players, and then ultimately, you know, couldn't get it done since then. What we saw with Dan Hurley up close and personal is he's getting really good players. He's not getting all lottery picks, and they are incredibly well coached. That the X's and O's, the actual coaching aspect of taking those Jimmys and Joes and putting them on the team in a cohesive unit still matters greatly in college basketball, and not just where the NBA players, Myron, okay, that's the team I'm going to pick to win the national championship.
Yeah, I'll push back on that a little bit. I mean, Stephen Castle and Donovan Klingon are first round picks.
Oh, I don't mean that there's not NBA players. I didn't mean it like that. But go ahead, yes.
No, I think, you know, so I mean, I think those guys have become elite talent. I think what he's done better than anything is just he knows how to find the guys that fit a particular role. You know, like, what is Alex Caravan on any other team? A big 6'8 forward who, you know, kind of maybe finding his spots, but like in that five-out offense, I mean, he maybe is the glue guy for that team.
Yeah.
Cam Spencer, who I've never seen him do anything to go 120 miles an hour. Like, I've never seen him quit on a play.
That's true.
Obviously, Kevin Castle's easy, right? You get the guy who's a five-star recruit, Donovan Klingon, who is a local kid, though, right? Donovan Klingon is from Bristol, Connecticut. So I think his ability, to your point, to put those guys together is what Cal lost. Cal's challenge wasn't a talent issue. It was he could no longer put those guys together and form a great team. Dan Hurley has been really, really good at finding guys who fill the right roles, putting them all together. I mean, you had five players of 9 points or more in that game. And then I think the toughest thing from an X's and O's standpoint, because it's not hard to convince guys to score. You know, guys will do anything if it means they're going to get up buckets. To convince guys to play with that level of intensity on defense, I mean, Stephen Castle is going to be a first-round pick and make millions of dollars in the years ahead. I mean, he might be making it now, you know, NIL. But the way he decided that Braden Smith just wasn't going to make an impact. And I know Braden Smith had a couple of looks off ball screens, but, like, Stephen Castle was an MVP to me because he was so good defensively, and you just saw his commitment to that. That, to me, is one of the genius things that Dan Hurley did. These guys were more invested in who they were defensively than offensively, and I think that's really hard to do in this climate.
Yeah, and it's that's a better way of describing it, is taking the talent and making it look more cohesive and connected and making it fit, as opposed to Calipari that has incredible talent but hasn't been able to get it connected over this recent stretch for him. Because, yeah, you're right, Klingon is a lottery, and Steph Castle, lottery. Tristan, you know, Newton's probably a first-round draft pick, but certainly he's a pro. So there's NBA talent on the floor with UConn. So I didn't mean to slide it from that standpoint, but it just felt like you've got this NBA talent, and maybe Steph Castle is a better example that you brought up, because Dan Hurley can go to the next big-time recruit and go, you know, you may not be scoring, but Steph Castle is a lottery pick because he was the best two-way player on the floor in the national championship game. Anthony Davis was the most outstanding player of the Final Four, and he scored like 8 points in the national championship game. Yeah. But it was, he dominated the game defensively against Kansas on that night. That, hey, there's still a way that you're making a name for yourself by going to the league by playing defense, and Steph Castle was a guy that certainly this tournament run at certain points in the season you could see it, but putting it together and being that dog on defense of, yeah, this guy's just not going to get anything, and being one of the guys that was just so relentless, and it felt like any element of letting up by the other team, UConn just took advantage and swarmed them, and then that was it.
It was amazing, man, just the way they can lock you down.
Yeah.
And again, it's not – no one was close to them. I mean, I followed Purdue. I was in Detroit, and obviously covered them in there, Sweet 16, Elite Eight, and then the Final Four national title game. They're not on the same level. I mean, it was mm-hmm. two different tiers, and I think that's been the most impressive thing. It's been a long time since I saw a team that – look like the opposing team in a national title game didn't belong on the same floor with them.
Yeah.
You know, and that to me is what UConn did to a very good Purdue team who went to the national championship in most years. Outside of those dominant teams I told you about, 2018, mm-hmm. 2012, Purdue would have won a national championship against a lot of those teams who won in the last decade, but UConn was just too much, man, too good.
Myron Metcalf is our guest. He's benefiting Jackson County CASA when he's on the show with us. Calipari official to Arkansas. He is the next Arkansas Razorbacks head coach. He's leaving Kentucky. How did Arkansas go from looking at Jerome Tang and Will Wade and the likes, and then end up with John Calipari? Was it they got turned down and just said, bleep this, we're going to throw as much money out there? Like, how did they go from looking at different coaches to then landing Calipari?
Yeah, I think you got to go back to 2020, right? And the tournament's canceled, right? Nobody gets to play. I think Kansas would have won that year, by the way. I've said that many times. But 2019-20, Cal has a really good Kentucky team. You know, and they, if there is a tournament, maybe they have a shot. Who knows? But that was the last team that you thought, okay, they can win a national championship. They kind of have it all. Then 21 happens, and they go 9-16. And I think that was the moment where, for a guy who had kept saying, this is a 10-year job, mm-hmm. it felt like both sides were starting to wonder if he had stayed too long. It certainly felt that way with him. And then you have the upset of St. Peter's in 2022. Last year you don't get to the second weekend, and then this year you lose to Oakland. I just think the best part for Cal, and I've been with him in Lexington, is when you are Superman, when you are sort of this beloved figure in Kentucky. But I think over the last 5 years he's lost that. So I think, to me, it wasn't a sudden thing. This was the whole point of being at Kentucky, is not just competing for championships and getting top 10 talent. But the whole point is to be admired and yeah. adored. And he lost that. And I think when he came to the end of this season, and for the first time maybe in his coaching career, where someone else was going to make a choice about his future, where someone else is going to decide what John Calipari is going to do next. I don't think his ego could handle that. You know, like suddenly it's like, do they want to keep him? You know, is there enough money for the buyout? I don't think Cal's faced that. And I think to be in that situation was a hit to his ego. And I just don't think Cal is ever going to be the kind of dude you push into a corner. I think the other thing is that I don't know that the gap between the blue bloods and everybody else is that wide anymore. If you can pay a coach a bunch of money, you have a bunch of NIL money, how different are Arkansas and Kentucky? Arkansas is not Kentucky. Kentucky's one of the top jobs in America. The brand, the money, the resources, the appeal, the history, all that. But in an NIL transfer portal climate, what's the gap? It's not what it was a few years ago, you know? And if he's got a pocket full of NIL money, he has a chance to win. So I think all those factors came together. Big boosters, Cal's ego, realizing he no longer had control, and that he wasn't loved, you know? Like, you don't want to be in Kentucky and nobody loves you anymore. And I think he went to a place where they'll certainly love him because they haven't had anything like this since Nolan left the building. Nothing against Eric Musselman, but this will feel like this is the best we've ever had to a lot of those fans, whereas Kentucky, it felt like we could do better.
The Myron Metcalf's our guest, and the NIL portion of this, I think, is just fascinating because, you know, we talk about players going to different places for NIL. I made the case yesterday that this is the first NIL coaching change in college basketball, that without the NIL, Calipari's not going from Kentucky to Arkansas because you're not recruiting the same at Arkansas that you are at Kentucky. He can recruit, but not to the level that you can get at Kentucky. But you do have some boosters that look at it and go, well, we're Kentucky. I don't need to go and pay $2 million for a player to come to Kentucky. We're Kentucky. Whereas Arkansas is starving, and they've got you know, some boosters that have a lot of money, some billionaires that are starving. That, you know, does Arkansas really have more NIL money to offer Cal, or do they have more motivated, rich boosters to give money to the NIL to offer Cal than Kentucky's willing to have?
I think it's probably the latter. I mean, between Tyson, the Walton family, Jerry Jones, there's a ton of money. But I think it's also about how you use it. So, like, with this court ruling the way it is now, like, every coach in America is a general manager. Mm-hmm. And that's how they're talking. Players aren't going into the portal and talking to schools and saying, how many shots am I going to get up? Their first question is, what's your budget? So I think Cal sees himself that way, and every coach should. Because now that's what you're doing. How much money do you have? What's your salary cap? And how do you assign that money according to value? I don't think this generation cares about, I want to play at Duke or Kentucky or Kansas the way that they once did. I mean, now it's like, okay, I'll probably be here for a year, maybe a couple years. How much money can I make in that time? I think that's a big factor. And if they're going to give you millions to build your team, remember, Kentucky fans didn't help Cal raise $1 million in their NIL fund.
Yep.
They didn't get to $100,000 a couple weeks ago when he put that out. We're trying to raise NIL money. So, you know, it's not about the money being there. It's, do you have boosters willing to invest to give you a chance to win? And I think that's what he has at Arkansas. Excuse me. And I think he feels like he can get the same kind of talent, especially if the money's the same. Do you think a five-star kid – if the going rate's $500,000, let's say, to get a top 15 kid right now, how much do you think that kid in America cares if it's Kentucky or Arkansas? I don't know how much they care, honestly, especially if they're one and done. So I think that's how Cal saw it. These guys are general managers. Coaches behind the scenes are admitting that. And now they're all talking more openly about the fact that, you know, we got a salary cap, depending on how much NIL money we can have. And we're going to dish it out to try to get the best team. Cal, who's coaching the NBA, I think is uniquely equipped to take that approach in ways that it just didn't work in Kentucky the way that we expected it to.
Myron Metcalf from ESPN is our guest. I want to talk to you about Iowa and South Carolina and the massive numbers that that happen in the women's game, the women's national championship game, drawing more viewers than the men's national championship game. It's something that you and I back in January, Myron, talked about, and you threw out the possibility. You said, look, there's a chance that this year the women's game outdraws the men. Now, there were some texters that were like, never, would never happen in my lifetime. And you know, we talked after the segment with you about, you know, just going through some of the texts. We're like, I don't think you should be easily dismissing that. We'll see what happens the rest of the way. But if the matchup is right, if it's Caitlin Clark in the championship game, if it's South Carolina or LSU in the championship game, those numbers could be massive. What do you think this means for the women's game? Is there some level of sustainability? It would be naive to think that Caitlin Clark leaving, the numbers would stay the same. But is there a level of sustainability to what Caitlin Clark and the South Carolina team and the matchup and the storylines this year brought to the women's game?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a level of sustainability. It's interesting that we never asked this in the men's game.
I know, yeah.
Magic played Bird in 79. I don't remember reading anything when I look at the archives that said, what's college basketball going to do now? You know, Michael Jordan played. What are we going to do after him? Georgetown. Yeah. And all those great Georgetown teams. Duke in the early 90s. Oh, my goodness, Christian Leighton is gone. What are we going to do? The Fab Five's gone. How are we going to manage? We don't do that in the men's game. Because the expectation is that the game is bigger than any one star and that growth is good for everybody. And we've set some of our biggest records in terms of TV viewing over the last decade. So I think the women's game will continue to grow. And Juju Watkins and Paige Beckers and the next group of stars will be big. Will we see a Caitlin Clark? Maybe not. But we also haven't had Magic versus Bird ever. But the game's doing okay. So I think it's good for everybody involved. And I think the benefit is the women's game to me feels like early 2000s men's college basketball in that you knew that a star would be with a particular team for a couple years. You could watch them grow. Caitlin Clark staying at Iowa, Paige Becker staying at UConn, that matters a lot. And men's basketball has really lost a lot of that. You don't get to know these teams anymore because they don't stick together. And that's harder for the consumer to track over time. But, yeah, the women's game is going to continue to grow. I don't know if they'll hit this number, but who cares? We didn't ask these questions about the men's game in these big moments. We shouldn't be doing that with the women's game.
Yeah, and I push back on those that are like, well, you know, it was Sunday at 2 o'clock versus Monday Monday night at 9 o'clock Eastern on, TBS. It's like, okay, well, what about the years past? those were still the same things in the years past, but nobody questioned that, you know, 2 years ago it was on TBS and they got 17,000 viewers in the 2022 National Championship game. And the women's game was on ESPN and got 5 million. But nobody's going, well, unfortunately, the women's game wasn't on, a network. And, well, okay, more viewers this year than last year. And last year was on CBS for the men. So it's not about just the network. It's about the storyline. And it's been awesome to watch. And you know what? The country, you know, got the eyeballs went to the game. There was an enjoyment of the game. We're seeing some star power. We saw South Carolina's dominance. We saw Dawn Staley and, you know, how awesome she is. And you know, the comments she had about Caitlin Clark and talking about the impact on the sport. And, you know, Dawn Staley's had an impact on the sport. But just the bigger picture of, look, this is what she meant for us. And there's no need to go and sort of downgrade or chop down the impact. This is the impact there. Now let's take the torch and continue building, because people that came before her also were building and building and building. And now let's capitalize and keep going and showing that there are stars at this level. And it's a great point about stars returning, which continues to draw the eyeballs.
Yeah, I covered Jimmer for Death Run in a tournament. I don't remember writing, oh, no, Jimmer's gone.
For BYU, you did.
Yeah, we did okay over the next 15 years. Yeah. I think the women's game will be okay as well.
I think so as well. Last couple of quick ones for you. Myron Metcalf from ESPN. It is our final time talking to you for the basketball season. But we had the debate in the previous hour. The four of us were sitting here talking, and we went through our top five coaches that if we're an athletic director, we would hire. There was a disagreement in the room of who number one was. So I'll just ask you, you're an AD, everyone's available. It's moving forward as your program. Who's the coach you're hiring?
Okay, everybody's Dan Hurley. I mean, I don't think there's a debate there, right? So
okay. I was wrong. You know. I don't think I'm wrong, but I said Bill Self that I would go Bill Self. The other, that's Dylan, who had Dan Hurley as well. So,
you know. Good choice, Myron. Good choice.
Yeah, Dan Hurley. My tiebreaker was the longevity for Bill Self, that he's done it for a while, and there's not a question about what happens moving forward, where this was an awesome two-year run for Dan Hurley, and I am not debating that at all. He was my one and one A. It was sort of a back and forth. The tiebreaker to me was the longevity and the success and continued sustainability of Bill Self, is why I went with Self. But you go with Dan Hurley as well.
Yeah, but I mean, they're all great coaches. You want, obviously, including Bill. You know what? I wonder how long Bill wants to do this.
Yeah, for sure. You know? I mean, that's part of it. And
I wonder how long he wants to do this.
You know, if this was his
generation, they're leaving, man. Yeah. Those guys went out. Like, well, they're tired of this.
If he didn't have the heart issue last year, and this is one of the things I brought up, is why if it wasn't for the heart issue last year, then I think it might be 4 or 5 years. But after that, sort of, there felt like a, I'm not even thinking about now, when, because at one point he said, I'm not going to do this till I'm 70. And then last year he's like, I don't even want to think about an age or whatever, because it's a new lease on life. And I have no, I did the thing of not coaching for a little bit while I was going through this. I have no idea what I will do if that's the case. Yeah. So I feel like there was a relighting of the pilot light for Bill Self in the drive to be the head coach for a while.
We'll see. You know, I just wonder, because so many guys like him have just decided it's too much. You know, they're over it. I just wonder how that will change their philosophies over time.
All right, last one for you. Dylan, can you play this clip here? I'm going to ask you, we end it every year, and I ask you who's going to win the national championship next year. So I want you to listen in. This was a year ago. I asked Myron Metcalf, Myron, UConn just won the national title. Who wins the national championship in 2024? Here was Myron's answer.
I think Edie has millions of reasons to come back for Purdue.
Hmm.
If he's back, I'll pick Purdue.
So there you go, Myron. You were pretty damn close. I mean, if Edie returns, I'm picking. And Purdue just lost in the first round to Fairleigh Dickinson, and you still went with Purdue returning. That's pretty good for a year away to say, if Edie returns, I'm going Purdue. So well done on that. Nice job. So I'll ask you again.
You mail me my blue ribbon.
There you go.
Whatever you give to people who finish in second place or whatever.
You know what? That's fine. It's a silver medal. You got that.
Steak knives.
There you go. Set of steak knives. All right. Fantastic. All right. Who wins the national championship next year, Myron?
Goodness, man. I'll pick Duke. Okay. But that could change. You know, I really want to pick Houston, especially LJ Cry coming back, but I'll go with Cooper Flag and Duke.
Okay. We'll see what we'll see what ends up happening. If they lose in the first round, we won't need to play this back at all. But if they make a run and they're playing for it, then we will definitely let people know what Myron picked. Myron, you're the man, as always. I love our conversations, brother, and certainly enjoy it this year as well. So thank you so much for taking the time out, as you do each and every week, and certainly giving back to the Kansas City community each and every time we have you on. That is awesome of you. So I appreciate that, and enjoy a little bit of the off season if you can. But I know we'll still be listening with ESPN Radio on Sundays, and you and Matt in the morning. So we still got that from Myron here on Sports Radio 810. Thank you, brother.
Hey, man, thank you for everything. I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. There's Myron Metcalf from ESPN joining us. He benefits Jackson County CASA, court-appointed special advocates, community volunteers just like you, stand up and speak out to help children who have experienced abuse or neglect. Jackson County CASA recruits, trains, supports these CASA volunteers to advocate for the best interests of children who are in the Jackson County family court system until they have a safe and permanent home. Jackson County CASA, CASA-MO.org. And as we've let people know, one of the awesome things about Myron Metcalf is, you know, oftentimes weekly guests may get a little bit of coin to come on and be a part of it, take time out of their, you know, busy schedule during the week and things like that. Myron, this is the third year we've had him on as our guest, maybe fourth year we've had him on. And each and every time he chooses a different organization or charity in Kansas City, and he does it with every city. Every city he goes on that he is a weekly guest on, he chooses a charity or an organization, and all of the money that would have gone to him, that would go to him, he then donates that to that particular organization, that charity, that foundation. So Myron Metcalf, even if it wasn't for how great the analysis is and the conversations with Myron, just to have him on from that perspective is great. So always appreciate Myron Metcalf joining us, and great stuff, even though I would agree with him and Dylan and Sterling and Jack But then we'd all be wrong. So I don't want to do that. I don't want all of it. I'd agree with them, but then we'd all, no reason to agree with them and then be wrong right along with them. That's just dumb. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. More Zone next. All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes. Dylan Michaels heading up until 2 o'clock. Mick Schaefer will be our guest coming up at 1 o'clock, KSHB 41 Sports Director. News of the day is that Arkansas officially introducing, not as a press conference yet, but tweeting it out, making it official on social media, you know, that they are now in a relationship. It is a picture of John Calipari in an Arkansas sport coat suit. And saying, Cal the Hogs there for the Razorbacks. So he is the Arkansas head coach. And John Rothstein reporting a couple of hours ago that Scott Drew will be meeting with Kentucky. Not that Kentucky will be reaching out and trying to hire Scott Drew. Obviously, that is what's happening. But Scott Drew, on the flip side, is going to actually meet with Mitch Barnhart and Kentucky. Not just a flirting so I can get a better contract with Baylor. I think meeting is a little different when, you know, it's like, hey, they're talking to my agent, and what do you think, Baylor? How about a little pay raise? How about a little more security, huh? Maybe more NIL? What are you thinking? This is, I'm actually going to meet with Mitch Barnhart and the Kentucky athletic director. And if that's the case, then the next steps would be what happens with Jerome Tang, and that is certainly a bridge that will have to be crossed if Scott Drew does take the Kentucky job.
Yeah, I feel bad for all my K-State friends and fans. I mean, this is a scary situation for those folks.
Well, at least they're in the Big 12 and not the Pac-12, and not one of the, because the Pac-12 is losing players. Oregon State.
Yeah,
I don't know if you saw the number with this. Oregon State had, God, I think it was 12. Had 12 players that showed up on any of the all Pac-12 teams in football, Oregon State football. 12 players that showed up on the first, second, third team, all Pac-12. One is returning. Every other one is transferred. One returning of the 12.
It's like Indiana State.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's Oregon State. What are they doing? They're staying. They're getting left behind. People are going to the Big 12 and the Big 10. So why am I going to play here at Oregon State? I can go somewhere else. I mean, the team is getting just dismantled right now. And that's not K-State, obviously. They're in the Big 12. It could be a worse situation because if K-State
was... Oh, it can always be worse.
Right, but I mean, if K-State was sitting in the AAC or something.
Sure.
And they're not. But if they were in that situation, then it's like, okay, it's going to be tough. But they're in the Big 12. They got money. They got a dynamite athletic director. And they may have gotten some things straightened out with Jerome Tang and Richard Linton and the president there at Kansas State. Not that it was a he goes or I go. Yeah. It's an either or. Not one of those things. But clearly there were some issues there that got resolved. And if those things are resolved, he was willing to turn down Arkansas. Baylor might be a horse of a different color.
Yeah.
For this team. And so it does suck if you're K-State because you found somebody that is embracing you the way that you want to embrace a coach, but they are embracing, he has embraced K-State when the end of Bruce Weber was blaming everybody except for himself, and it was an unwinnable situation at K-State. You can't do it there because the fan base is negative. Recruits don't want to go all the way to Manhattan to get them there. Boy, if we got them here, yeah, we'd be able to get recruits here. But we can't even get them here, right? It was everything that people talked about K-State in a demeaning fashion is what Bruce Weber then said about K-State on the way out. Like, you know what? Bleep you, dude. And then Jerome Tang came in and was like, I don't know what the hell that guy's talking about. I've had opportunities, and I'm taking the K-State job for a reason. And I love you, and this place can win, and we're going to be a family, and we're going to do it out of love. Isn't it amazing what you can accomplish when you do something out of love? It's amazing.
I still can't imagine what was going through Bruce Weber's mind.
Nobody
when he
knows
said
that. Even not even adding the qualifier, it's just that at that point, you're just good.
It's the most asinine, absurd take. Because a lot of these schools that have won, especially recently, they're not in these. It's not New York or LA winning or Chicago every single tournament, everyone always acts
UConn
like
UConn is a campus surrounded by nothing.
And again, I've been there. That's my whole point. I've been there. Like what about Baylor? Like Scott Drew turned that entire Waco. That's a big town in Texas.
Yeah.
And you're competing with all these other massive programs. Like when Bruce Weber said that, just say you're a bad head coach or a bad recruiter. That's all you have to say.
I mean, you just say I don't want another job anywhere else. Because if I'm an AD, I ain't hiring that guy.
Zero chance.
Like, he had the resources at K-State and blamed everything but himself as the reason why, you know, he didn't succeed. No, I'm good. And by the way, he was also saying he's so good. He's such a great coach that getting a team to the Elite Eight and winning a Big 12, he overcame all the deficiencies at K-State. Imagine how good I am as a coach that I was able to overcome all of these obstacles and speed bumps and hurdles to go through around and over to get this program. I mean, good God, dragging this dead carcass of a program to the Elite Eight. Just how good am I? Am I right? I mean, come on. And then Jerome Tang's like, that guy's a clown.
Yeah.
Let's party. Let's do the damn thing.
Yeah, Michael Beasley. Yeah, you know, of course, you know.
Also, stop with the bleep KU. And no more court storming, because we're not going to continue to look at them as so much better that we're going to think about them in other games and we're going to storm the court just because we beat them. Expect that to happen. We are not K-State of the last few years when your coach made you feel like you were inferior, inferiority complex or second class. That ain't the case here. And if he turns down Baylor, it's even more, assuming Scott Drew, this is an assumption and a hypothetical, if Scott Drew takes the Kentucky job, it's an even more driving home the point for Jerome Tang of, okay, this is now a Taylor Swift love story.
Just say yes.
Yeah.
But I guess in this instance, just say no to Baylor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just a massive fan of Jerome Tang, so I hope he stays for all of the locals here because he's such an easy dude to root for.
Yep, absolutely. You like good people. I like good people, and Jerome Tang is good people. We'll take a timeout, come back, continue rolling. More Zone next. All right, wrapping up this hour, Nick Schaefer will be your guest coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. KSHB 41 Sports Director. We'll hang out with Mick. Talk some Rawls baseball with him. See why he's either right to pick Bill Self or wrong to go with Dan Hurley. We'll ask him about those things.
It's 4-on-1, Jason.
Yeah, bring it on.
Give it up.
Bring it on. I'm Jon Snow in the middle of this, the middle of the field, baby. Bring it on.
I thought my idea was pretty good. We do a video bit through an audio medium where you try and pick my batting stances with this random bat we have in the room. You already got Craig Counsell and Julio Franco.
I get it. Yeah.
He missed Jason Kipnis, everyone.
We'll get to some of the text. This text comes in, I think it's great. It says, the shocker, the Missouri kid doesn't have Bill Self number one. Actually, one of the Missouri people had Bill Self number one. The two KU people didn't.